Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, and this is a very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. This is our Cause and Effect edition brought to you by our good friends at UHY Advisors. And from UHY, we have our good friend, Brad Baer. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, great. Good morning, Lee. How are you?
Now, Brad, I heard you've been doing some traveling. What's that about, right before the holidays?
Yes. Well, I'm out. You know, Santa is on strike this year, so I'm I'm going in to try to help him out. But really, as part of the practice that I lead here at UHY, we work with a lot of CFO organizations to transform their accounting departments and really take them and shift them to more of an analytically kind of focused organization. And so as part of our practice, we have clients all over the globe that we serve to really help them get to a very efficient, effective place.
And then you brought with you another UHYer?
Yes, I did. I did. I brought I think he's from the north somewhere.
The north?
Yeah. Where are you from, Andrew?
Like Smyrna?
My southern accent will give that away. Long Island, New York.
So how are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us today.
Now, you guys wanted to talk about a topic called continuous accounting?
Yeah, so we have been serving our clients and working with one of our technology partners out there, we've been really focusing on helping clients really take their accounting departments to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what the concept, the way we see continuous accounting, a lot of times when we come into accounting organizations, a couple things that we see. One, the majority of their team's effort is spent on, really manual type of activities, preparation activities, where they're not really adding a lot of value by analyzing, their business and really providing very targeted reporting to their stakeholder groups. And so, what we do is really help them take what their team's doing on a monthly basis and automating a significant amount of that, as well as also, giving them visibility at a really transactional level to what's going on in their organizations.
And then to kind of round out the group here, we got some of your people, colleagues in different industries.
Yes, some of our peers that we've met through, through discussions like this. So we're excited to have some really thought leaders join us today.
Okay, so let's start. Let me introduce Matt Cagwin, and he is with First Data. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Lee. How you doing?
Doing well. And then we also have Tammy Coley with Cox Communication. Welcome.
Hi, Lee.
So you guys are all in the world of accounting.
Absolutely. Exciting.
So that must be a fun group to get together, right?
You have no idea. And you will see today.
So First Data, you guys are neck deep in technology. How does that impact the accounting world?
It's actually an interesting thing. So we're very heavy in our technology on the client side.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the areas we probably haven't put enough attention into over the last number of years is how do you really empower your accounting team and give the insights you need for your leaders? So it's one of the things we partnered with UHY very recently with to try to take us to the next generation.
And then that's to kind of take all of the data and then make it so that the layperson in the executive suites can understand it and use it as actionable?
It is. I mean, so basically right now we've got about a third of our team that do month-end tasks every single month over and right. over again, rather than value-added. So we're trying to free them up so they can spend more time on insights and analyzing the work and then bringing it up to our leaders so they can use it to make it actionable and drive our business forward.
So now this concept of continuous accounting, is that new to you guys or this is something that's been around?
It's a new concept to me, but I think I'm new to the organization. I've been at First Data now about 3 years now and did very different roles over the 3 years. But my last organization I was with, we were farther ahead in this journey, had a lot of the same tools that we're talking to UHY about right now for our company. So I'm used to the technology and the approach you have here, but it's one that we're trying to bring into First Data right now.
And that same with you, Tammy?
Actually, at Cox Communications, we have been using this continuous accounting concept before I even knew what it was called. But probably at least 11, 12 years
we've been on the journey. Oh, so it's been around a while.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've done a lot of great things with software, with helping our team to get away from those manual processes that Brad talked about and really automate those things so mm-hmm. we could spend our time on the more value-add activities. So we're really proud of that.
Yeah. And, one of the things that's interesting, Matt, you and I were talking a little last week, and we talk about challenges and risks to organizations And, you know, not having visibility to really what's going on in your accounting department, you know, is very risky these days. And I don't know if you want to share the story, but you were just, you know, the conference, you were just up in D.C. and some of the epiphanies you had, I think it'd be great to share for the team here.
Yeah, Brad, absolutely. That'd be a great thing. So I actually shared this with my team on Monday. We had an all hands for Global All Hands. But I was at a conference last week with the AICPA Institute in D.C. And
what does that stand for?
American Institute of CPAs. So it's basically a group of accountants that come together once a year, and the SEC, which is the one that oversees our profession, looks at all the financial statements we file with the government, got up in front of us. They have a group called the Enforcement Group, which is the one that I never want to talk to. And they get up, and they every year, I go to this conference regularly, and every year they get up and share areas where they've gone and gone on an enforcement action against a company. Mm-hmm. And last year, there were a couple hundred enforcement actions against various companies in the country or in the world. And they were going through their examples. And one of them that was really eye-opening for me, because my past experience, usually when someone gets in trouble, you think it's going to be the chief accounting officer, it's going to be the CFO, it's going to be the CEO, because they probably had the wrong tone at the top, the right wrong controls, something of that nature. But the part that was really eye-opening for me is they actually fined and sanctioned some people at a much lower level because they were booking journal entries. And this is when they're putting something in your general ledger, a transaction, without adequate support for it. So they actually had an employee who their boss said, hey, go book this entry. The employee went and did it, as they were told to do. But the employee didn't do the fiduciary responsibility, say, what's it for? What's the support for it? Does it make logical sense? So the manager got in trouble, the company got in trouble, and the employee got in trouble, all at the SEC, for something that one could probably view as very benign. So I use that as an example for my team. And one of the areas where Blackline and UHY are helping us is with that tool, there's better workflow for journal entries, and you can put your support in it. And it helps bring that visibility. So it's all there. So when you get to the end of the year, you can find it. You don't have a risk of not knowing where it is. And then it's going through the approval process. It's all there. So it's an important area. It's an important area to help keep my employees out of trouble as well as myself.
Now, Andrew, when you're working with clients, how is it, like, how do you bring up these difficult conversations?
Well, the first thing that we start with is just trying to get an understanding of their current processes. Like, what does it look like today in their environment? And what are some of the challenges that they have in their processes? Where do they spend a lot of time that what we would call waste or non-value-add activity, which are very manual efforts and lots of spreadsheets that people have to go in and pivot and VLOOKUP and things of that nature, where we could take some of these tools and technologies that are available in the marketplace, first eliminate the non-value-add activity, and then automate them in tools like a Blackline that we partner with.
Now, Tammy, since you've been doing it the longest, I guess your firm has, are these tools, is this something that you set it and forget it? Or it seems like, at least I'm active in the marketing area, it seems like there's a new tool like every 6 months.
Right. Well, Blackline has been the tool that we've used to automate the majority of our transactions. Mm-hmm. Oracle is our ERP, so we do what we can with Oracle. But Blackline...
I hear that a lot. People do what they can with Oracle.
So Oracle is our ERP. We try to use it for what we can. You're right. But Blackline actually takes us a long way further than where Oracle could take us. And so we've automated 96% of our journal entry processes, 84% of our reconciliation processes. We have done a lot of work to automate the processes, get that stuff out of the way so that my team can focus on the more value-added activities.
Yeah, and you know, Matt, one of the things that you brought up, and we typically see out there, is that, you know, companies like to invest on technology that's really, you know, driving revenue, giving them better visibility to where you're profitable, and often on the back end, it's very difficult to get, you know, accounting organizations to get the funds to invest in technology, right? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it can be perceived as not adding value. And you know, having seen what Tammy's done over the years to really, you know, her team, 80 to 90% of her team is focused on analysis, right? And that is the non-standard for accounting organizations. But, you know, so Matt and Tammy, you know, Matt, since, you know, you recently kind of are looking at tools like this, how did you build the case and go to the you know, leadership, which you're part of, to say, hey, we need this tool and it's going to add value? How did you get over that hurdle and really get your organization on board to invest in your team?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brad. I mean, when we look at investments in our company, it's got to do one, two things. It's either got to make you drive revenue, lower your expense, or make you more compliant and keep you out of trouble. I think this is one where you actually can get at least two things, if not all three of those. So So our approach was, we looked at both the expense standpoint as well as the compliance standpoint, and we took those angles. Didn't really tackle revenue when we were talking to our leaders, but we were able to show them that the investment we were going to make would be relatively cost neutral over a number of years, but here's all the compliance improvements you'll get through this through implementing this. And it's really important for us because we also have a number of ERPs, so this is one tool that can kind of wrap it all together and hold it together for us as a company, where some folks, and I'm actually very envious of Cox, where you have an Oracle solution and that's what you use because at least you have one consistent backbone. And that's what my last organization was the same way, so I know how it feels to have one of those.
Yep. And Tammy, from your side, obviously you've been on this journey of continuous accounting for years. Your most recent kind of product that you brought in-house was this intercompany hub solution. So how did you build the case to, hey, we need to invest in a new product here? You know, how did you get it over the hump to get consensus and get the product in?
Okay, well, we were in the middle of the Oracle R12 upgrade. And we were looking at Oracle as a potential solution for our intercompany processes. We weren't able to get quite where we needed to get to with the functionality that Oracle offered. And that's how we were able to take a look at BlackLine. So over the years, each of the Cox divisions have had, I'll say, certain pain points around the intercompany process. We generally receive an Excel spreadsheet with all the expenses that the parent company has paid on our behalf. Our job is to get them recorded and to get them recorded right to match the parent company's books so that our intercompany balances balance. And so BlackLine was able to give us that product, the Intercompany Hub, and make that much easier for us so that it's not just receiving a spreadsheet and doing a lot of manual work to book everything. It's so much more automated, especially for the intercompany transactions that come over the same transactions every month. So you don't want to have to go through a lot of manual effort to record those same transactions each month. What BlackLine Intercompany Hub did for us is allow us a way to automate those transactions.
Now, I would think that by automating so much that you're improving kind of the quality of life of the people in your department, right? Because they're doing the less mundane and maybe more frustrating and spending more time on the higher level, more challenging things that they enjoy.
Absolutely. And we don't have to work as many late nights. There's a lot of benefits to automating the processes. But we did find out, let me be real, we did find out that there are those of us accountants who enjoy the routine.
Uh-huh.
So it does take a different type of employee when you get to the point where you're automating and requiring a lot more analysis versus actually booking the journal entries.
Now, when you're working with, maybe at some of these conferences and you're with a bunch of other accountants and you've been doing this for so long, what are some of the things they're telling you that they're still doing that you like kind of roll your eyes?
Well, I try not to roll my eyes because I understand. I certainly understand.
10 years ago, you were there.
Exactly.
10 years ago.
I mean, it's things like still recording, still keeping paper copies of journal entry support and still doing reconciliations in Excel. People with Excel workbooks with 25 tabs that track a reconciliation process for 2 or 3 years. I mean, I know because I was there, so I don't roll my eyes, but I am glad that I am where I am. I'm glad I'm not there anymore.
Yeah. And really what Tammy's team has done is they've been on a journey. This is not a one-time event. It's not something that you just click a switch and then all of a sudden you're going to be automated with every process. What you do is you pick up where's the pain, where are they spending the most of their manual effort. We tackle that first, and then we build out the case for where else can this piece of technology or where else can we find improvement opportunities in our organization, eliminate the non-value-add activity, and then move forward and hopefully be able to automate as much as we possibly can so that they can turn to analysis as opposed to the preparation activities.
But now what's the... So when a company, like it seemed pretty clear that this seems like a more efficient way of dealing with this, what's the kind of pro and con for a company deciding whether to do this or not? Like what's kind of where's their head at in this?
From the outside in, and we'll talk from the inside out here, but one of the biggest challenges we see is, companies have a process that's working, right? Excel is working, right? And paper is working, right? And so, a lot of organizations.
An abacus was working.
You got it. I mean, Matt and Tammy are not your typical accounting leaders, right? I mean, they are. They have a vision. They want to change. They realize that to stay relevant, you have to grow. But Lee, the reality is, first of all, hey, we have something that's working, and why are we going to take something that's working and replace it with an unknown? And then, you know, the other big question is, okay, and what's the ROI on this? So, you know, Matt talked about, hey, it's going to make us more compliant. You know, sometimes it's difficult to really see what is the automation return to this? What's the value of having better visibility? So it's, you know, it's really the age old, well, we have something that's working and we don't want to change. I think that's the biggest obstacle we see. Andrew, I don't know if you have anything you want to add from your side, and we'll go from the inside out.
We've always done it this way, and what we've done works. So the fact that we're able to produce our financials in a certain amount of time, regardless of whether it's automated or not, it works. So
until it doesn't work.
Until it doesn't work.
You go to jail.
Well, not even going to jail. I mean, you have audit issues, and it doesn't necessarily lead to going to jail, but your auditors say, wait a minute, there's this reconciliation is inaccurate, and they look deeper, and you realize that you really can't do an effective job with your reconciliations without a tool to help you. And Excel was great for a long time. But we've expanded so far beyond what Excel can provide in trying to automate the processes. And so I think a lot of times the catalyst to do this, it does come from an auditor saying that you need something.
Some crisis occurs. So
that's exactly right.
And then
right.
That is the catalyst that spurs you to act.
Right.
I totally agree. And I actually want to go back to a comment a minute ago that Tammy had around the people side. I mean, when you look at this, there are lots of people. Actually, when I started pushing this about a year ago, I had a lot of folks in the team that were excited. They came from other organizations because we just moved a lot of jobs to Atlanta very recently for First Data. And they were all motivated. But then we started rolling it out. Their fear starts about, oh, are you shrinking my team? Am I losing my job? Where does this go if you're making this more systematic? And what we've gone with the approach of, there might be some people that don't fit. But our job to train you, help you get to be more efficient, start doing the analytics, redeploy you on other activities. But there is that fear aspect because there are a lot of folks that just like the repeatable stuff. Very mundane, but they know how to do it. But our whole thing is people are working too hard. They're not working effectively. And there are mistakes being made because they are working too hard. So this helps solve all that. So I think that's the part we had to do for our, back to your question before about how do you get it sold in and why do people not do it? Well, our organization didn't do it for 10 years. We're 10 years behind Tammy. But where I worked before, we did have it. We did do the same exact process, but it's a long journey. So you're making little incremental steps every single year. And you'd keep trying to get to the destination, and your destination kind of keeps changing because the world evolves.
Exactly.
But you got to do it, otherwise you get left behind.
Yeah, it's, you know, Matt, to your point, we prescribe to, you know, you hear, especially when you come into a lot of accounting organizations, you know, what's the best practice? Tell us what we need to do, right? We don't know what to do. You've seen hundreds of companies and just come in and tell us what to do. And, you know, the reality is that every organization is different. Their, you know, their industry, their technology, their culture. And we prescribe to this concept of leading practice, right? Because there is, you're never there. I mean, if you think you're there, you're left behind. You get acquired. You have operational issues. So it never ends. And I think the power, you know, I'll let Tammy share a little bit how have you been able, as your business has changed over the last 10 years, how is having visibility to, you know, really at a transactional level in a lot of cases? I think you guys bring in 200 transactional data sources into Blackline, but how, you know, this concept of leading practice and continuously kind of evolving and improving, maybe share a little bit of some things, how being designed this way in this continuous accounting kind of architecture has given you visibility to morph your business. I'm sure you have some great examples to share.
Well, I have an excellent example to share. This year, I think I mentioned before, we had the Oracle R12 upgrade. And let's just say that things didn't go perfectly. They never do with an upgrade. But because we have this continuous accounting, because we've automated so many of our processes, because we've eliminated so much of the waste, my team was able to make it through this upgrade, as difficult as it was, without any impact to our financial statements. That is a huge testament to how much work, all the work that we have done for the past 11 years, how an Oracle upgrade that, let me say, didn't go as well as we wanted it to, but with no impact to the financial statements.
Now, did it impact the time? Did it?
That's the other thing. We were able to close the books on time. There was no impact to the timing of our month-end close and no negative impact to the financial statements. Now, let me also say, we worked a lot of long hours to try to fix what was going on with Oracle. A lot of the issue was around our accounts payable. So we worked a lot of long hours to fix what was going on, but there was no impact to the financial statements.
Now, when you have this foundation of automation, how does that impact with like so many mergers and acquisitions and people having disparate kind of systems? Is this cause more headaches or does this solve some headaches?
I think it solves some headaches, but you do have to bring those new, like anytime there's a merger acquisition, you're going to have to bring that into your processes that you have in place. So we have a team, actually, my team, that's specifically there for anytime there's something big going on in the company, such as a merger, but something big going on, and it could be a new product, it could be anything big going on in the company. How do we take that and incorporate it into our automated processes rather than allowing that to break down the processes that we have in place?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Matt, pulling it up, I know you've done this before in prior to coming to First Data. You know, at a high level, you know, kind of keys to success for you and learnings that you're applying to First Data. So, what did you learn when you went over in Europe and went through this transformation process with your team there? What are you some of the learnings you're applying that maybe some of the listeners can think about as they get ready to go and maybe their journey out there?
I mean, so a couple of different things jump in my head when you ask that question. First off is progress. I mean, it's one of those things that you got to get started. You got to have some milestones and metrics you're on track. You got to think about how do you redeploy the folks and train them, and you got to give them that vision. I mean, the biggest thing is hope for people. If they don't have a hope for where they're going to go and what does it mean for them, they're going to disengage and not want to help you get there. And then just keep prodding along and take that step forward. And then the other one is over-communication. I think when I did this at my last organization, we made a few mistakes where we let people do it a little more decentralized and we didn't set enough of a vision about exactly what we wanted them to do, but we bought the tool, we gave them a little bit of training, we went to implement it, and then we looked back on it a few months later and we said, that's not exactly what I wanted. And that's one of the reasons why we partnered with you all is to help give that top-down look versus letting it kind of happen bottoms up. So that's probably the high points in my mind.
Now, is there a way to give them like an easy win, something that shows them that we're on the right track here?
Yeah. I mean, Tammy, I think you've got a great story to share when you were first rolling out this technology, and it probably applies to any technology, but I think it was, there was someone out in the field that was a naysayer and,
right.
Or you may have a better story, but I think you've got some good ones to share.
So when we were rolling out the reconciliations module of Blackline, at the time we were decentralized. We had 18 different field locations and everybody had their own separate accounting groups. And so we said, okay, let's roll out the template, the reconciliations that are going to be the easiest for people to understand so that they can adopt more easily. So there's a reconciliation template called the Subledger Match. It's one where we just pull the data in. So before Blackline, people had to go into Oracle, find the right report, take the number from the report, key it into an Excel spreadsheet, go to the general ledger, find the number from the general ledger, key that into the Excel spreadsheet, figure out whether the numbers match or not. If they don't match, then go back and figure out what's going on to try to reconcile the account. So we took that as our first template to use to introduce to the company as a whole. And what Blackline did was pull that number from Oracle. It's already populated for you. Pull that number from the general ledger. It's already populated for you. It compares the two for you. So all you have to do at this point, a lot of your accounts are done for you. It auto-certifies. So people really like that until they start thinking about, oh no, now what am I going to do? So you do have to quickly behind that say, okay, but what you're going to do is the further analysis that we didn't have time to do before. So that was one of the things that we did to get people on board quickly when they could see that they didn't have to go through a lot of that pain. But again, you have to follow that up with, okay, but what we need you to do is this additional
analysis. You're not being replaced by it.
Exactly.
We're using more your brain.
Exactly.
Yeah, because when we graduate from college as accountants, you know, it's very rare that we say we want to reconcile. Like what do we want to do? We want to provide value-add analysis back to
right.
the business.
You're not just because you're good at cutting and pasting.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Tammy, one thing just thought of is, we're talking a lot about Blackline here, and but some of the listeners may not know what that is. So who better than you to kind of, I think you are the anointed queen of Blackline. but if you want, maybe you can just quickly for the listeners describe high level, like what the platform is and where it fits in with Oracle and Hyperion and maybe some of your other systems there.
Okay. So Blackline is a tool that, again, we use it with Oracle. Oracle is our ERP. Blackline does for us a lot of the things that most ERPs can't do. One of them, Oracle does reconcile accounts. So I'm not saying that it doesn't, but Blackline truly gives you the automation to reconcile the accounts. So there's a difference between having a place to house your reconciliations to make sure that they're all done and then actually having a tool that truly reconciles the account. So when you have an amount that you need to amortize over a 12-month period, instead of having to do that in an Excel spreadsheet, you put that in BlackLine one time, it's done for you. So BlackLine allows you, it automates the reconciliations of your accounts. It automates journal entry processes. And so a lot of times in accounting, we're pulling from a data source and we're multiplying by these same percentages every month, or we're pulling data from some report somewhere and we're using that data to book a journal entry. And we as accountants going through those same motions every month. What BlackLine does for you is allow you to pull that data in and set up rules that allow you to calculate that amount and automatically post the journal entry. So it's the reconciliations, it's the journal entries, it does variance analysis. We also do matching. So think about a high transaction volume account. You got all these transactions coming in, you got all these transactions going out, and all you need to know at the end of the day is what is left. And so what BlackLine does is it has a transaction matching module that compares the two different data sets and lets you know what's left. So there those, and we also have the intercompany hub module that allows you to bring in those intercompany transactions and make sure that you have them accounted for properly and balanced between the entities. Did I miss any of this?
You know, I would just, you know, just to wrap around all the functionality, I know that you and a lot of our clients work to take really their record to report process, all those steps that have to happen every month. And really, you know, it's a planning and scheduling tool to really, you know, manage your entire record to report process. And so it's, you know, just like manufacturing organizations, you know, they have planning and scheduling systems and they're measuring and monitoring waste that goes through their manufacturing process, right? Every step of the way, you know, if you say, if you go to Ford or GM or any of those organizations, hey, you know, how was your productivity today? What was the waste that came off the line today? What was the root cause of that waste? How do we eliminate that? You know, that's the way we look at BlackLine, is the ability to really, really plan and schedule what's going on in your organization end to end. And it can be extremely powerful. And, you know, thinking of Matt, one of the conversations we had last week with one of your team members, Doug, you know, it's we were excited to see a lot of organizations, you know, Tammy, I'll have you share in a minute here some of the metrics and what you measure. But Matt, share a little bit your thought of bringing some, you know, someone on your team from a Lean Six Sigma kind of background, efficiency, effectiveness background. I'll let you kind of share kind of your vision for bringing him board, because we're excited to meet him.
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually added a person very recently that, as you just said, has his background's not even accounting. His background's really more the manufacturing side. So his job is coming in, mapping out processes, looking for waste. And when I first brought him in, a lot of my directs were wondering, why are you doing this? And it really depends on where someone came from, what their background is, and whether they're comfortable change. But for me, I really want to understand, what are the metrics? What are we trying to accomplish with this? How many journal entries are you doing? How many are manual? How many are automated? How many recs are you doing? How long do they take you to get them done? On your closed checklist, you just talked about a minute ago, Brad. And for that one, for me, we have turnover. Lots of companies have turnover. We've moved a lot of jobs around the U.S. recently. And as you do that, your turnover rate is probably a little higher than you'd like. But when you move it, how do you make sure you get everything done? And if everything doesn't get done, what fell through the cracks? What do your auditors ask about that could cause a problem? So for me, what he's helping me do right now is he's going and meeting with all of our leaders, understanding our processes, understanding which ones are broken, and doing an end-to-end project plan, mapping out from in not just my own department, from before, total end-to-end process. So where it starts in the business, all the way through where it gets to our general ledger, if it's an invoicing, all the way to get the cash, and thinking through those, where are the handoffs? What are the metrics? What are the turnaround times? And we're trying to build out KPIs for each one of those, so we're treating it more like, if those may be familiar with an outsourcing, that's what you typically do with an outsource partner. They'll want to measure the SLAs and they'll have the measurement times and they'll report back to you. But a lot of companies don't do that internally. And I got to know this in my last organization, because we did have an outsource partner, and I just fell in love with it. When they'd give me the reports every single month and they'd walk me through it, and I'd see the red, green, yellow, and I didn't spend a lot of time. You just look at it, and the reds, what the heck's going on there? And then you dig into it. And then I got to this organization and I go, well, where's the KBI sheet? And people are like, KBI sheet, what does that stand for? Like, so and the people are all great. It's just where you grew up and what you're used to and what you've seen. So that's one thing that Doug's helping me do. He's been with me now for about 2-3 months, and we're still in the early days, but it's one of my goals for him this next year and for the department, is how do we move to where very quickly on a dashboard, I can see what's going on and where the pain points. And I know BlackLine provides that for a lot of things that flow through that, which is why we wanted to go do that tool. But beyond that, there are other KBIs that are important that we'll have to figure out how to get.
Yeah, so, and man,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, manufacturing organizations have been using these metrics for years, and until recently, these CFOs organizations have been late adopters to the whole concept of Lean Six Sigma, balanced scorecarding, theory of constraint. And without a tool, without some of the tools that are available on the marketplace, like a Blackline, you're not going to be able to get to those KPIs easily. Mm-hmm. So it gives you so much more visibility to really what's going on in the whole process.
And when you start to look at your accounting this way, it's amazing what you find. Think about materiality. Think about a company the size of Cox, who at one point, before we started thinking this way, we were booking journal entries for one penny. And what do you think, what value do you think we were adding by booking a journal entry for one penny, other than there was an accountant somewhere that was dancing around because
high
they
fives,
got
I caught it.
Because they exactly, exactly. Yeah. We also found out that we were spending a lot of time correcting entries, just booking an entry, to correct the correction of the entry, and then to correct that eventually.
And then someone has to manage those people.
Exactly. Exactly. So those are some of the things that we found that we were able to eliminate once we were more automated and doing a better job of monitoring the activities and clearly understanding the why behind each of the activities that we were performing.
And Tammy, how did you, you know, really instilling these, you know, Matt and you and I talked a little bit about this last week, but Tammy, how did you really change the perspective of your team to really get this lens of, because you've been great at integrating these concepts. You know, for the listeners on the radio here, how do you do it? How do you shift that view where, you know, being a little more smarter and thinking about value add and non-value add waste? Share a little bit. How did you do that?
You know, actually, that happened with UHY. So we had engaged UHY to help us through a project. And I don't even remember exactly what the project was at the time. I think it was probably a specific reconciliation process that we needed some help with. But UHY took us beyond the ask and worked with my team to understand waste. And we started talking a whole different language. We start, woo, that's waste. And
you hadn't been using that term previously.
That's transport. I think transport was one of the ways. And that's rework. And so we all had our new language. And anytime we saw ourselves, we saw in our processes, we saw any of these things, it actually became exciting for the team to identify and eliminate those types of things. And so that was really the result of bringing UHY in for a specific project, but getting so much more from the project by teaching the team about waste and how to think through eliminating that waste going forward.
But you had already been using Blackline prior to them?
I think it was kind of simultaneous. Because we implemented Blackline at the end of 2005, and I think UHY, I think it was 2006 maybe when we started working with UHY.
Yeah. And Lee, the thing that, you know, it's interesting to, you know, piggyback off Tammy's perspective, I'm sure Matt has perspective as well, but, you know, from my background as a controller, I've been in the chair, right? And I've really dealt with managing the record report process with Excel and with, you know, email. But then also, as I learned these concepts, I'm a green belt, I'm not a black belt. But as I learned these concepts about waste and value add, and then reflecting on what I and my team did, I mean, a lot of our time was spent fixing things, right? And it's like, and 89% of my team were fixing things because people didn't do them right the first time, right? But if you don't really, you know, we worked really hard and, you know, we felt like we improved because we were getting things done, but we weren't really getting to the root cause and really saying, how do we stop this from happening? You know, and so it was really, you know, that's when the light bulb went off in my head. Oh my gosh, 90% of my team and my time is waste. I'm not adding any value to the organization. And then we often come in, you know, it's interesting. There's two different kind of views of the office of the CFO when we come in. There's one, and Tammy's done a brilliant job. I think when you came on board, it was, okay, here comes accounting. Now it's like, you know, accounting has leaders embedded in the business. Andrew and I were just having a conversation with a client earlier this week about, you know, they're in the hospitality business, and every year they're bringing on 100 new properties and spinning off 100 new properties. And just thinking of the complexity there, and one of the challenges they have is when they bring properties on, you know, accounting's not involved, right? And so now they're supposed to do P&Ls for these businesses, and there's all types of contractual agreements that have been involved regarding management fees. And so they're talking about wagging the tail. They're at the way into the tail. And we were sharing some of the stories, Tammy, how you've embedded accounting people in the business. And so, okay, what do you need to measure success? What are your expectations? What's unique about this deal so that, you know, accounting's being built into the process? But oftentimes accounting is, you know, it's overhead. They're not value add. And it's, you know, it's been fun to really see you do that. It sounds like, Matt, I know you're here to do that at First Data, and you've done that in the past, but I think, Matt, you were going to say something when I was chatting there.
Yeah, I had a couple thoughts as you're talking there. I mean, to wrap up what you're just talking about there, I think it's a journey getting to the seat at the table. I mean, it's one of those things for me that 3 years when I first got here, we weren't invited to the thing was signed and implemented. And then someone said, well, why are you telling me no? And I think what we had to do is prove to the business that on the front end, we can help you both with the process. We can help you with getting the contract crafted in the right way that we get the answer we want out of it and giving ideas. And we don't always solve every problem. Sometimes we give them 4 or 5 solutions and they say, from a business standpoint, none of those work. And we end up with an answer that's still a no. But at least then you've collaborated and you've helped them understand how to make it better. The other thing for me that I was going to come back to is on your idea of trying to fix a process from an end-to-end standpoint, we actually just had one in our company recently related to leasing. And I don't know if, Tammy, if you've ever experienced this in your 10 years, but we had a process where POs get set up and someone will put the mass PO, blanket PO, and they'll put like 10 different leases into it. It'll have the equipment, it'll have the service, it'll have the taxes. And then from an accounting standpoint, you really only have in your books the liability for those capital leases for the equipment, not the other two elements. Well, it all gets dumped into one place. And my team had to spend hundreds of hours going through and sorting it. It worked great for years when the same person did it over and over again. When we moved those activities, the next person got it and said, oh my God, what the heck is this? And it got overwhelmed and it took a lot of effort to get it back at current. But then that person stepped up and said, let's go end in here. How do we change this? How do we make it better so that the person on the front end doesn't have any more work, but they just change how they do their work so that I don't have the downstream work. And it's those kind of thought processes. People think about their work and if you're in this field, what are you doing today is painful? And then what could someone change to make your life easier? And if it's not about passing your work to somebody else, but it's about reducing the overall work for your organization you're in and trying to figure out the best place for it. It doesn't matter how big my team is or somebody else's team is. It's about making the company better as a whole and trying to eliminate the reworks.
Yeah, and one of the things that we try to do is oftentimes when the people are designing the process up front, they have no idea what the impact is downstream. So when we go out to clients and we're doing some of these diagnostics, we want to get all the stakeholders in the process involved from the very beginning so that as we map out the process, the people downstream realize, holy cow, at the end aren't the problem. If we had done this right up front, they wouldn't have all these problems on the back end and we'd be able to get the reports that we're looking for timely. But a lot of times the stuff that happens in the beginning causes the rework down the road because oftentimes the sides aren't collaborating throughout the process. So one of the things that we like to do is get a cross-functional team together to map out the process together so that everybody understands what's going on from end to end.
And that's what you were saying, Matt, about that more holistic view, the view from above to see how everybody's playing together. So you can identify kind of these kind of little hiccups that are happening.
I think we as accountants have always, I think it's been a shift over the last few years, but we never really thought we needed to understand the business to account for it. I mean, you just, it's
you
a debit or a
lane.
Credit.
You're in your exactly. lane and you're just doing, look, I'm heads down. I caught that penny. Remember that? 3 weeks ago?
Exactly.
Don't forget that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely a change in mindset that, wait a minute, we need to get involved in what's going on in the business. We need to understand the business so that we can be more value add to the business. But no, previously it was, just book all the journal entries and then close the books. And then afterwards, the people in the business tell you how wrong what you just did was.
So now how is that? I mean, now that seems like an evolution of the role over time. Brad, can you share how by implementing these systems that you open up your clients' minds yep. that this is a good thing?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, we to the conversation here, we often see their silos, right? Everyone lives in their silo, whether it's, hey, you got and even in the accounting world, right? You got the operational accounting, the people out in the business, they're in their silo. And then you've got, the accounting group that's taking all those numbers, closing the books and, creating the P&Ls and balance sheets, they're in their silo. And then the FP&A group is in their silo. And then you've got the reporting people in their silo, and then maybe even have the executive team that's getting reporting.
Right, because that's the way it's always been
yeah.
done.
And it's just you're just throwing things over the wall, right? And to Andrew's point and Tammy's point and Matt's point, a lot of the fun part of what we'd like to do is really breaking down those silos, right? How do you really understand what each other's doing? But the other key point is technology, right? In the past, we come to organizations, we have some companies have 103 ERPs. That's just ERPs, let alone subsystems, right? You've got probably hundreds of shipping and billing systems. I mean, reality is, Matt, you guys have grown through acquisition, right? And so, there's this, okay, well, where do we spend the money? Are we going to grow or do we want to build the infrastructure? And, we feel it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. But Lee, to answer your question, like a tool a tool like Blackline, you know, to back to the, you know, the original point of the conversation of continuous accounting, the way we view continuous accounting is really managing at a transactional level that life cycle, that transaction end to end. So if you're looking at an order to cash process, like where is that transaction coming in, or even, you know, setting up the contract, right? How do we make sure we're talking with some clients where, hey, how do we make sure even we're getting the contract system set up in the system, and then when new transactions against that contract come in, you know, we're managing that transaction end to end. And, you know, it's funny, you always say, you know, hey, when you talk to accounting executive, what keeps you up at night? You know, geez, Matt just talked about, hey, I've got people like signing journal entries and no support. But wouldn't it be great at a transactional level to know that every transaction that makes up your balance sheet and P&L isn't in the right place every day? And if it's not, I know it's not in the right place every day, and I can take the action. I mean, and that's kind of mind-blowing, but technology like Blackline, the way we view it, it enables that. You know, Tammy's been bringing in, you know, again, I mentioned earlier, 200 transactional data sources into Blackline. But just envision if you could bring in every transaction and, you know, work that through, if it's an intercompany transaction, from the operational side to the accounting side to the tax side to the treasury side, and manage that. So, you know, technologies like Blackline empower that. And, you know, it's difficult, you know, with an Oracle, you know, we leverage technology that organizations have. But the piece that's been missing is that linkage that can really enhance the systems that you have. So, you know, it's understanding the process, understanding, you know, the gaps of the process, eliminating the waste, and then what's left, you know, understanding the capabilities of the tools that you have. A lot of what we do is educate people on, hey, did you know Oracle or SAP could do that, right? And then, again, what's left is what you put in a platform like Blackline. So I don't know if that helps that, kind of give a
But doesn't
bit of
it require the culture of the company to even be open to this?
Yeah, I'll let these two talk.
Absolutely.
Right, because that's a whole other ballgame. You know, if the culture is like, look, you're the accountant, so just shut up and just fill out this form, right?
And it usually is that. So we have to do our work to change that. We have to prove that we can
but
add more value.
But now you
have
tools, though, that can help you make that case. Though.
Exactly, exactly. And I think the other thing about it, though, is we as accountants, generally, I guess we like month-end close. I think we like to have our little month-end parties where
actually,
the company brings in
dinner. I actually got out of accounting because I was like in a perpetual close. It was like 21 days.
You're
and
still
then,
medicated, right?
Yeah. So I didn't love it that much.
But I guess my point is I can remember before Blackline and before our continuous accounting mindset, I remember we'd reconcile our bank statement. So we'd reconcile our cash, and that would result in recording bank fees, recording bank transfers, recording NSFs, all those transactions from the bank file that require you to go back and post a journal entry. With the change in mindset, we're saying, wait a minute, that reconciliation is not what should spark the journal entry. You have to get back to the real transaction.
Right.
So Blackline then allows you to bring in that bank file, and as those transactions are happening on a daily basis, go ahead and get those recorded. Don't wait until the end of the month, and it's never the end of the month. So don't wait until the end of the following month to record the bank fees from the month before. Now you have an opportunity to record your transactions more real time. Stop saving all of your work for that month-end party and actually start booking your transactions more real time so that you can provide more real-time information for the business.
So the concept really being like in typical accounting organizations, there's some real peak times. So the end of the month turns into this very large hump that everybody has to get through their work. So their level of activity, they work lots of overtime. There's lots of effort that goes on in preparing for a month-end activity. So the concept of continuous accounting is what activities can we take and leveraging the tools that are available to us, plan and schedule them so that we're doing some of these activities throughout the month, which ultimately will lower the hump or shorten the hump that we have to go through for our month-end close process. So Tammy's team doesn't spend 20 days like I did when I was an accountant closing the books. They're much bigger than my company was, and they're done in 3 days, 4 days at the max. Yep. So because they're doing the accounting activities throughout the month.
Yep. And Lee, to your question about culture, right? And really, you know, is that a big piece of this? I never forget when Bill Fitzsimmons, who was a finance leader at Cox for years, retired, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago, I don't know how long it's been, but at his going away party, I remember over at, I think it was at the...
Villa Christina.
actually, we did a smaller one. It was another steakhouse, McKendricks, I think. But I remember he pulled I don't know, Tamer, if you're standing there with me, but he's like, Brad, why don't more organizations do what we do? Because to him, it wasn't like this should just be happening. It should be natural. And I said, well, first of all, you know, it takes, you know, culture is a big piece of this, right? So Cox is very like, we're here. It's a very empowering culture. We're here to get things done. I said, second of all, it needs a leader like you, Bill, that, you know, really empowers, you know, their people to really take steps to maybe fail, but to, you know, to drive on their passion vision. And then third, it takes someone like Matt and Tammy to actually have a vision and be a leader, right? And so there's three pieces to the equation here. And most organizations, you know, either there isn't an empowering environment that, you know, from a cultural perspective, there isn't a visionary like these two. And then, you know, the office of CFO often tends to be very conservative, like, oh, we got to do, you know, we can't do that. So culture is, you know, is a big piece of the equation. And I think, you know, Matt, you're in a position now, I think great position to come in and say, okay, you've been empowered and you're getting things done. So.
No, but I agree. I mean, because as you look at it, your CFO doesn't know what you do, to be candid. If you have a controller that's been in the role for a long time, they don't know what else is out there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not sure who brought it into it's Cox and how they got discovered. But if you've been there and your team has grown up in the organization and your leaders have grown up in the organization, there's really no one pushing for it.
It's insulated. It's right, right.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the benefit that my current organization has is I had seen
you
this
had
someplace
fresh
else.
Eyes.
I had fresh right. eyes, new to the company, came from a company where we had a CFO who didn't know the detail, but he had a desire to be world class in the way there's a firm out there that does some metrics on companies and in terms of which ones are world class. And he had a desire to do that. And over the 10 years I was with him at this last organization, we went from being third quartile to being world class in the last project I led for him. But he didn't know how you got there. I mean, we had meetings and he listened to the parts and he was a smart guy and got it. But he didn't really care about the tacticals. He was more about, I want to be as effective and efficient as possible. And I want to make sure that we're doing the right things for our business and we're supporting them. And you doing a journal entry for a penny or a dollar or $1,000, those things aren't really value added. That's not moving the needle for our shareholders. That's not making our leaders make better decisions about the business. Stop that work and figure out how you can do it more effectively. Automate stuff and redeploy your people so they're helping our leaders. And that was his mindset. Now, that's what I think
But that's a visionary mindset.
Absolutely. And I think that's what people, I don't know who's listening to the call here, this radio, but a senior leader in companies, if that's the mindset they have, they don't have to know the detail. They just have to espouse that and challenge the people that
are doing it. Well, they shouldn't know the detail. It's right. Better they don't.
Probably not. But then challenge everybody to go figure out how you make this happen. And then you'll find this solution or different solutions. Lots of ways we can get there.
Right. And like you were saying, Brad, it's the empowering the people to go out there and find the appropriate solution so that you can now elevate the person that's doing the work to use more of their brain in order to really have a meaningful growth in the organization. Yep.
You know, and there's investment you have to make. And, you know, that's, you know, part of that culture is, hey, we're going to invest even if it's not, you know, driving revenue or really managing expenses. So that, you know, that's part of that culture piece is let's invest.
So now how do you, where the rubber hits the road, how do you guys measure success in your organization?
Well, for us, are we delivering?
So those 1 cent wins aren't success anymore, right?
Exactly.
Right? Those are failures.
Exactly.
Really. That's like before you were high fiving. Now you're like, well, sorry, you can't work anymore.
It's when we come together on day four and we've closed our books and we are aligned with the business and there are no surprises. That is a huge win for us.
Right.
Things happened that we didn't like, but it was not a surprise. We were able to get the information out to the business much sooner. So that's a big win for us.
Now, Matt, for you, since you're kind of newer at this.
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty similar thing. So when I first got this role 2 years, promoted in this job I'm in now 2 years ago, we weren't meeting our timeline. So we closed on workday five, so a day slower, and we missed our 4 o'clock deadline every single time. And it was always a different group. So we started publishing a scorecard, and we named and shamed people. And then we started having calls where we'd talk at noon that day about what's open. And I'd get involved in making the decisions about how big is it, because people would hold it open for a couple $1,000 item. And you're like, oh, really? You're going to miss the deadline for that? So, but it's a mindset.
They would have done that indefinitely if you didn't
Absolutely.
Kind of take that step of kind of sharing that information with the group. Now, tell me that conversation when you go, hey, guess what we're going to do now? We're going to announce this to the company that you're stopping, you know, this whole process for $1,000. Everybody was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's jump on board that. Like, tell me how that negotiation occurred.
So the one on the close day, we just did it. The concept they did where they stopped their pennies or whatever your thresholds are over at Cox, we actually have not implemented that yet. So we built out a schedule. We looked at how much entries we had at different thresholds. We debated what we thought the right answer would be. Sadly enough, we had lots of penny ones as well. We had lots of ones under $10,000. I wanted a threshold around $10,000. We went out to my finance partners and we said, here's what we're doing, guys. And they said, no, that's going to mess my numbers up. I can't report to my leaders anymore. And I'm like, but show me your report. Oh my God, you're round to millions. you're round to millions and stopping these 20% of our entries that are under $10,000 going to mess up your numbers? Yes. So we actually put that on hold the last 3 months. I wanted to wait to the new year and reinstitute that policy. But for the closed ones that are affecting our actual closing, we've stopped those when they affected the last second.
But once you kind of verbalize it and get everybody talking about it, doesn't it just become silly?
Nine out of 10 people, it was silly. I had one out of 10 who fought it, went to the CFO without me involved, sold him on it. Then I got him on a weekend. I told him, well, I actually can probably eliminate about two heads if we do this or redeploy my better value added work. Do it tomorrow. So I actually have his green light, but I want to get that 10th person on board. Right. We've got other priorities with getting Blackline.
The other thing is that as accountants, when we're in college, if you don't reconcile to the penny, you lose points. So the mindset shift that you have to create now is it's acceptable if you're a $1 billion company, there's really a penny is immaterial, right? But as accountants, it does take that, okay, we will allow those thresholds to exist because they're really, it's costing us more.
The cost is too high.
Yeah, the cost to prepare is way too high.
I remember the first time we introduced materiality limits, and I had all the senior leaders in the room from all the different regions because accounting was still decentralized. And there were about half the people in the room who were saying, that's way too high. No way you're going to impact my department. That's not going to work. And then there were some people who actually got it who said, hey, I think it's actually too low. And at one point, one of the leaders in the room said, hey, maybe we should take a vote. And everybody's, you know, but the ones who thought it was too high kind of offset the ones who thought it was too low, and we ended up agreeing. Hmm. And so it was really good the way it worked out. I think we argued long enough to where we just ended up agreeing on it. We had to start somewhere.
So Brad, how do you help your clients go through this process, you know, unscathed or as little scathed as possible?
Yeah, change management is a big piece of what we do. But to some of the earlier points, the fun part is, you know, really, where's the pain in your organization, right? What's kind of paradigm shifting with a lot of the new technology like Blackline is it's not a 3 or 4 year journey like implementing an ERP at Oracle or SAP. It's really, you know, where's the pain in your organization? You know, let's really understand that process in your organization. Let's understand your culture and, you know, let's put together a very robust communication plan and get some wins, right? Get some momentum. And then also show the value to the people that are going to be impacted by the change. I mean, I think there is tons of value, lots of automation. You know, Tammy shared a story a little earlier today, but you know, really what's in it for them as well. So, you know, find that place in your organization. Where's the low hanging fruit? Where's the pain? Where's something we can transform quickly that's going to add a lot of value to your team? So it's a win-win-win all the way around.
And the other thing is getting starting with the person who's actually doing the activity. So when we start some of these projects, we're not only talking with the leadership, we're sitting side by side with the people that are actually doing the reconciliation, preparing the work, because we want them to acknowledge what we're seeing as far as non-value add activities so that they could buy into the change. And we validate what we're seeing at the lowest level before we even introduce a lot of those concepts to the manager to validate what they think they're seeing. So, because what they say they do and what they
really do
is not always a reality. So, you know, as part of the process is we take a group of their reconciliations, evaluate them, and then we put them through the whole change management process to say, all right, this is the template that we're going to use now to automate the rest of the process. But they've bought in from the beginning as far as, and they're involved in the change.
And depending upon the project, Andrew, the other piece of the folks doing the work is they often have a lot of great ideas and solutions, right? So, you know, some of the best projects, you know, whether it's Blackline or non-Blackline, is having clients say, wow, you know, those UHY guys were great and gals were great, but, you know, most of these ideas were ours, right? And, you know, from a change management and user adoption perspective, if people feel like they've been part of the future state design and the solution, then it's going to stick, right? So, and And the reality is they have a lot of good ideas because they're the ones in the front lines that are dealing with the issues and they know what the problems are. So it's really understanding what they're doing and rolling them in the process and actually capturing their ideas.
Well, I think everybody said or used the word journey as part of this, and it is a process. How do you, like at first it's the implementation and trying it. And then, like Tammy was saying, it's like now you're wringing out things that you probably couldn't even imagine a few years before. How do you kind of maintain the momentum on this journey?
I guess once you get that mindset change, you, every time you see something new come about, you notice
you're,
things.
And you're excited about
it.
Right.
excited about it. And even though I say, you know, our journey's been going on for 11 years, we still find things.
New stuff.
And new and exciting things that we can implement and still make it better. So it's sometimes, I guess, the problem may be, okay, Tammy, when is good enough good enough, you know? But it's
but
it's,
once you have this mindset, it's never good enough.
That's
you're
right.
Always,
yep.
You're
that's
always
right.
pushing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Matt?
No, I would agree completely. I mean, what I've done is we try to reward people for their ideas. Is they go and implement. When I have one of my employees right now, we moved some work from New York down here to Atlanta recently. And it's a process where we have to split our volumes up. And it took the person previously, a person and a half, 2 days during close to do this. Well, it doesn't seem like a lot of money, but that's critical path. This is right. critical 4 days. They're spending a day and a half parsing through these reports and sending them out to the finance guys so they can look at them, figure out whether their revenue's right, make sure their commission accruals are right, and they're using it for some analytics. And we got it down here. We had a new person doing it, and one person couldn't do it in a day and a half because they didn't know how to do it. It took them forever. So then we had to add three people onto it. And we're like, let's call IT. IT, what can you guys do here for us? And IT's come in here and helped us over the next month and a half after that, and we've automated that. And then the person who had the idea and the tenacity to go and work with IT to make this happen, we've got a program in our company called Bravo. And it's one where you can give out four different thresholds of awards. It's anything from basically $80 to $500. And they get them in gift cards and they can buy stuff kind of like you do with your Amex card. You get the points. And we gave this person one of our top awards because they thought of the idea, they pushed, and they worked hard on it with the CF, get with the IT organization. And that top award has to go through the CFO and myself for approval. But I wanted to send that message to the team. If you had this creativity, we just eliminated several days of the work. You should get something for this. Now, right. Everybody else go do the same thing.
That's awesome.
So now, if you had to pick one thing that you would recommend to the listeners to get started, what would you pick? What's the low-hanging fruit in order to make something like this occur?
Gosh, that's a really hard question. I think you need the tool to. I'm kind of torn between the tool or the materiality limits because you need
the
tool.
And the egg, right?
Yeah, because you really need the tool to be able to get to that the place of automating as much as you need to. But without the materiality limits, you end up automating a bunch of stuff that doesn't even matter anymore. So can I have a tie?
We're going to all vote.
My vote was actually the materiality limits. Both my current organization and my last. We did materiality first because it freed time up from people. So mm-hmm. then you could put them on a project like Blackline. Without that, you end up continuing those mundane tasks. So that's the path we took. But I think probably both work. And it depends on what your resource levels are and how hard people are working.
Brad?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. And from our side, you know, it is different from every organization, right? And every organization knows, you know, when we go, part of what we do is quickly go in there and help them diagnose and say, okay, you know, if I could wave my magic wand, what would I make go away? So it's, you know, there's some broad policy type of changes you can make. And then even from a functional perspective, most organizations can quickly identify that. And then I think the key takeaway is, you know, this isn't a 3 or 4 year kind of initiative, right? Let's get in. There is technology. And even without technology, there are ways to quickly transform pieces of the organization. So, you know, figure that out and start the journey. Andrew, anything you want to say?
No, I would say, you know, where to start is where's the pain, you know, yep. like, you know, like everybody knows where they're spending their most amount of non-value-add time. So even without technology, what can we do to eliminate yeah. those activities and start there?
Yep. And, you know, one final thought from Andrew, I mean, maybe a great place to start is really, you know, having some acknowledgement and education on what is really value-add, right? I mean, we have a fun little exercise that we do with phone books to really bring it to life with people. But I mean, if you don't even question and take a step back of like, hey, why am I even doing this? That, you know, that awareness can add huge value as well. So just, you know, one final thought from my side, Lee.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. Now, before we wrap, Tammy, if somebody wanted to connect with you, maybe on LinkedIn, is there you up for that? Have a conversation if
they have questions? Absolutely.
Tammy's not shy. She'll talk to everybody.
Matt, are you game as well?
I'm game on LinkedIn, yes.
All right. And Brad, best way to get a hold of your organization if somebody has a question or is considering implementing the continuous accounting?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, you know, I'm on LinkedIn as well. And then, you know, my email address is bbaer@uhy-us.com, double B-A-E-R at uhy-us.com.
Andrew?
Absolutely on LinkedIn. And then also by email is a great way. And it's aborsuk@uhy-us.com.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. This is Lee Cantor for the Business Radio X family saying we will see you all next time on Cause and Effect, brought to you by our good friends at UHY Advisors.